Self-government is our right, a thing born in us at birth, a thing no more to be doled out to us or withheld from us by another people than the right to life itself, than the right to love our kind.
Hey, guess who? Our relatives shot us.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Belgium equalizes adoptions, but Massachusetts ignores church bias, the execution and legacy of Sir Roger Casement, and a rockin' good time in the audiophile. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Kathy Sanchez.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 22, 2006. The Belgian Parliament has passed legislation to grant adoption rights to same-gender couples equal to their heterosexual counterparts. The lower house approved the measure in December, and with two abstentions, it narrowly passed by one vote this week in the Senate. Gay and lesbian couples won the right to legally marry in Belgium in 2003, but only heterosexual couples or single people had previously been allowed to adopt. Mieke Stessens of the Belgian Federation of Gays called it a memorable day for the children of gays. Finally, they earned the right of a worthy legal link with both their parents. Elsewhere in Europe, same-gender couples can adopt in the Netherlands, Spain, Sweden, and England and Wales. In Germany and Denmark, adoption by lesbian-gay couples is limited to the partner's biological children.
But in the U.S., Roman Catholic agencies in Massachusetts are being allowed to reject gay men and lesbians as adoptive parents, even though that's a clear violation of the state's anti-discrimination laws. The Massachusetts Department of Early Education, which regulates adoption agencies, says it won't act on any charges of discrimination because Governor Mitt Romney has proposed legislation that would allow agencies to reject gay and lesbian applicants on religious grounds. We're going to wait and see how the legislation plays out, the agency's general counsel told the Boston Globe. Romney proposed the bill after Catholic Charities of Boston announced last month that it was ending its adoption services entirely because it couldn't reconcile state law with church teachings that consider adoption by gays and lesbians gravely immoral.
But the center-left coalition led by Romano Prodi has been officially declared the winner by Italy's Supreme Court in last week's national elections, despite charges of voting irregularities by outgoing conservative Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. Berlusconi had enjoyed strong support from the Vatican, so his defeat is seen by some as a sign of diminishing papal influence in Italian politics. During the campaign, Prodi promised to introduce civil partnership legislation if he became the new prime minister. There will be at least a few lawmakers pushing him to fulfill that campaign promise, as openly gay Giampaolo Silvestri was elected to the parliament from the Green Party, as was bisexual Green Party chair Alfonso Pecoraro Scanio. Gay activist Franco Grillini won election with the Democrats of the Left, and out-lesbian Titi De Simone was elected along with Europe's first transgender MP, Vladimir Luxeria, for the Communist Refoundation Party.
Nine men who spent nearly a year in a Cameroon prison on suspicion of homosexuality have been released, the San Francisco-based International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC, reported late this week. They say the verdict was announced during a quick trial in the capital city of Yaoundé, where the defendants were cleared of all charges. They were part of a group of men arrested last May at a nightclub thought to be frequented by gays and lesbians. 11 men remained in detention, reportedly because they were too poor to hire lawyers. Two of them were released in February for lack of evidence. While nothing can return to these men the year of their lives spent locked in a cell, said IGLHRC Senior Coordinator for Africa, Carrie Allen Johnson, we are hopeful that the rule of law and respect for human dignity are re-emerging as basic principles of human rights in Cameroon. The African nation has been in the spotlight in recent months after three tabloid newspapers published sensationalized stories about homosexuality and lists of celebrities and government officials alleged to be gay. Homosexual acts are punishable by up to 5 years in prison there.
The Iranian government continues to sanction executions of gay and bisexual men on trumped-up charges of rape and kidnapping, according to a new report issued this week by Simon Forbes of the UK-based queer human rights group Outrage, which urges other countries not to deport queer Iranian refugees. The nine-month investigation, Outrage spokesperson Peter Tatchell said, is based on information from credible, verified sources inside Iran. It provides clear evidence of homophobic honor killings, arrests, torture, and executions. The report documents lynchings by Iran's security forces, secret hangings in prison, and internet entrapment through foreign-based online gay dating agencies. Stories about such murders in the Islamic Republic of Iran are not new, but this may be the first comprehensive report about them. As we told you last week, the Dutch immigration minister established a moratorium on her threatened deportation of lesbi-gay Iranians, pending a government investigation of conditions for gay and lesbian people in Iran. The UK, EU, and US should permanently halt the deportation of lesbian and gay Iranians, Tatchell urged. So long as Iran criminalizes same-sex relations, it will not be safe for gay people to return to Iran.
As we've also reported, lesbians and gay men in Iraq are increasingly being targeted with violent attacks, kidnappings, and murder by religious fundamentalists in that war-torn country, and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission this week called on the United States government to do something about it. Executive Director Paula Edelbrick, who's written to the U.S. State Department about the situation, issued a statement saying, "We believe it is the responsibility and obligation of the United States, considering its present involvement in Iraq, to protect and support the most vulnerable and marginalized populations being targeted for this violence. We expect that the U.S. State Department will condemn these acts, as it recently has condemned homophobic acts in Nigeria and the United Arab Emirates," she says, "because leaders who condemn such brutality have the power to stop it."
South Africa's Cape Argus newspaper reported this week on the execution-style murders of two well-known gay men, 28-year-old Brett Golden, who starred in the MTV comedy Crazy Monkey, and 27-year-old Richard Bloom, a designer for the Cape Town-based men's label Maze Clothing. The two men were reportedly found naked except for their socks, with single gunshots to the head. While it's not yet clear if homophobia played a role in their killings, Glenn DeSwart of the Triangle Project said the Cape Town queer community has been traumatized by the brutal murders, which for some have evoked memories of the similar execution-style Sizzlers massacre of nine gay men in 2003.
Police probing the vicious assault on two CBS TV network news producers visiting the Caribbean island of San Martin earlier this month have taken a suspect into custody. Americans Dick Jefferson and Ryan Smith were attacked outside a bar by several men shouting anti-gay slurs, who viciously beat them with tire irons. Jefferson was hospitalized with head and back injuries, but has since returned to work, while Smith is still hospitalized with possible brain trauma and is being treated for aphasia, a disorder which makes speaking difficult. San Martin Chief Prosecutor Taco Stein told reporters this week that two men had been picked up by police, one who has since been released and another who is still in custody. "This guy is talking," Stein told reporters, "and according to the information he's giving us, we expect to arrest at least three other men. He has thus far refused to say anything more about the suspect, however, or to provide further details of the investigation." "One witness does not make a case," Jefferson told CBSNews.com this week. "There are many people who saw this happen," he said, adding that at least 25 people watched the attack but did nothing to intervene. It began in the early morning hours of April 6th when Jefferson and Smith were standing outside a bar with several friends. Shortly after Smith got a hug from a friend while comforting him over the recent death of a relative, Jefferson said, "A white car came screaming out of nowhere and attempted to run us down. One came towards me with a tire wrench, and the next thing I know, I'm waiting for the ambulance."
And finally, also expressing concern about ongoing violence against LGBT people in the Caribbean and in Latin America is Dr. Mirta Rosas, director of the Pan American Health Organization. Recounting last year's anti-gay murders in Jamaica of that nation's leading AIDS activist, Steve Harvey, and of Octavio Acuña Rubio, a psychologist and well-known human rights and gay activist in Querétaro, Mexico, Dr. Rosas also cited a recent NGO report issued by the government of Brazil documenting the murders of 2,092 gay men and lesbians in that country between 1963 and 2001. "Why should the Pan American Health Organization care about these crimes?" she rhetorically asked in a statement released this week. because hatred against homosexual men is not only a threat to human rights, the right to the sexual orientation of one's choice, but to life itself, she wrote. We know that homophobia contributes to the spread of HIV. Fear of being stigmatized often prevents homosexual men from seeking HIV testing, counseling, and treatment. This situation was precisely what those murdered activists were trying to change. There is, however, some good news, she continued. The governments of Brazil, Mexico, and Colombia recently launched mass media campaigns against homophobia. In Argentina and Chile, this theme has been featured in poster campaigns and on television. The messages were well received, Dr. Rosas concluded, suggesting that Latin machismo may now be more a stereotype than an irreversible mindset.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 22, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Kathy Sanchez.
New York Energy, Florida Freedom, and San Francisco Survival will rock your world in this month's audio file later in the program. Homosexuality was considered an illness early in the 20th century when gay humanitarian and controversial Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement was enthusiastically recording the intimate details of his sexual escapades in several personal diaries. Despite the exemplary human rights work on two continents that got him knighted, his advocacy for an independent Ireland led to his being put on trial in Britain for treason. In the fourth and final part of this special biodrama, written and produced by Hugh Young and narrated by Barry Empson, the publication of Casement's scandalous diaries seal his fate.
They took Sir Roger prisoner and sailed for London town. And in the tower they laid him as a traitor to the crown.
We present The Broken Heart of Ireland, The Life and Death of Sir Roger Casement, Part 4, To Love Our Kind.
For bringing German rifles to their lonely Bannerstrand.
We've told you how Casement saved the blacks of the Congo Free State and the Indians of the Amazon from slavery and worse, and how he went to Germany to try to get arms and men to lead an Irish rebellion, and when that fell through, to prevent it. Instead, he was arrested in Ireland and put on trial in England, but he was doomed. By a hostile press, judge and jury, a weak and self-serving defense counsel, but doomed most of all by his diaries, in which he'd recorded in juicy detail tricks from Kinshasa to Rio to Dublin. Three diaries had been found months before at his Belfast lodgings and passed on to the prosecution. Three pages, dating from 13 years before, were torn out and photographed, with entries like,
"Huge tram inspector, stiff as sword and thick and long. Eye to meet enormous nine."
The exuberance of these entries is amazing, considering that Casement himself considered homosexuality to be a terrible disease, and there was nothing like a gay community as we know it. Yet he enjoyed his many partners with plenty of affection. Even Adler Christiansen, who had betrayed him in Europe and now offered to give evidence against him. The diaries were mentioned in court, but misleadingly. F.E. Smith discussed the harmless diary found on Casement as if it were one of the explicit ones that all the jury by now had heard of. The outcome was inevitable. Casement was convicted of treason, and the death penalty was mandatory. But first, Casement was asked,
"What have you to say for yourself? Why the court should not pass sentence and judgment upon you to die according to law?"
"My Lord Chief Justice, I may say at once that I protest against the jurisdiction of this court in my case on this charge, and the argument I am now going to read is addressed not to this court, but to my own countrymen."
Casement's enemies predictably despised the speech. Smith walked out, but his remaining lawyer noted that it held the attention of the entire court from first to last, and one commentator, Wilfred Blunt, thought it the finest document in patriotic history.
"The government of Ireland by England rests on restraint and not on law, and since it demands no love, it can evoke no loyalty. If I did wrong in making that appeal to Irishmen to join with me in an effort to fight for Ireland, it is by Irishmen and by them alone I can rightfully be judged. Self-government is our right, a thing born in us at birth, a thing no more to be doled out to us or withheld from us by another people than the right to life itself, than the right to feel the sun or smell the flowers or to love our kind.
Our kind. Doesn't your heart go out to a man who could say that from the dock of the Old Bailey with the judge about to sentence him to death and knowing that the diaries were being circulated? One of the judges had a facial tic that looked like a ghastly laugh as the death sentence was delivered. There was an appeal, but since it was the same argument as before, it was hopeless. There remained the hope of a reprieve by the Home Secretary or an appeal to the House of Lords, but that required the consent of the Attorney General, and he was F.E. Smith. The date fixed for execution left only 2 weeks for a reprieve campaign, but messages began pouring in from Ireland, from the Congo, from the Amazon, from the USA. A motion was carried in the Senate, but Woodrow Wilson, an Orangeman and a Presbyterian, refused to support it on the pretext that Casement was not American, and he delayed a second resolution until Casement was dead. William Randolph Hearst wrote an editorial from a hospital bed to support reprieve. Much important support collapsed, though, when supporters saw the diaries. The villain here is the legal adviser to the Home Office, Ernley Blackwell, who had a malignant hatred of Casement. He arranged for prints of the diaries to be shown to anyone who might have agitated for Casement's reprieve, including King George V, who said of another gay man,
"I thought men like that shot themselves."
It was Blackwell who suggested to Cabinet that the diaries be used to smirch Casement's reputation after his execution and so prevent him from becoming a martyr. We now know that two of that Cabinet were homosexual themselves. One later fled from scandal into exile. The other committed suicide.
It's the chaplain again, Casement.
The Archbishop says you must first express sorrow for any scandal you may have caused by your acts, public and private.
I do not.
Then you know that tomorrow you will die in mortal sin.
Cardinal Bourne is trying to make me betray my soul.
May the Lord have mercy upon you.
Amen.
But it was remembered that as a child, Casement had been baptized a Catholic, and he only had to make a general confession to be absolved. So, on August the 3rd, 1916, Roger Casement, his knighthood stripped from him, went to the gallows. As the priest said,
"He feared not death. He marched to the scaffold with the dignity of a prince."
And the hangman said,
"He was the bravest man it fell to my unhappy lot to execute."
When the prison bell tolled to announce his death, some people outside cheered in derision. He was buried, according to custom, in Pentonville prison grounds.
No cairn-shaped mound on a high windy hill with Irish earth the hero's heart enfolds, but a burning grave at Pentonville the broken heart of Ireland holds.
And it wasn't until 1965 that his remains were returned to Glasnevin Cemetery, near Dublin. And what did he achieve? In the Congo, probably more than he knew. His report prevented much of the exploitation that took place in adjacent countries. In the Amazon, not a great deal. Slavery was found there as late as 1940, forced labour as late as 1970. Ireland is still neither united nor free, though much of the credit for what freedom she has is Casement's. Nor can he be said to have struck a blow for gay liberation. Yet this man, who lived and died for others, this Roger David Casement, was a gay man we can be proud of.
"And I mean to free my countrymen on the lonely banner's strand."
This series was written and produced by Hugh Young.
It was presented by Barry Empson.
Sir Roger Casement's so-called Black Diaries continued to be a sore spot in Anglo-Irish relations for nearly 8 decades. Many charged they were forgeries circulated by the British government to discredit him. The controversy was finally laid to rest in 2002 when an extensive forensic study ordered by the Irish government determined the diaries were indeed Casement's own.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine.
Thank you.
That was without cue cards, people.
A power rocker spreads tranquility after the ghetto cowboy rolls out of Broadway and broken band members form a new, all in this month's audiophile.
Hey, guess who? I rode the short bus. Hey, guess who? I wore cowboy boots to school. Hey, guess who? My hair was big and my skin sucked. Hey, guess who? My lunch alone. I was the last one picked up for the team. Shirt to skin, you know you couldn't bite me. I got a blue ribbon at the science fair. I wasn't cool enough or the hip enough for your click to share.
With a number of Broadway and off-Broadway shows under his belt, Kevin Cahoon is ready to rock out on his own. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
Filling in for Chris Wilson, I'm Pam Marshall, and you're listening to Audiophile. The debut album for Kevin Cahoon and Ghetto Cowboy is simply called Doll.
I wrote this album. It's got a real New York energy. It's a pop record. It's happy and joyful and liberating, but yet it's got something to say. It really is an album for anyone who's ever felt like they were on the outside or on the margins of society. This is an album for them.
What's your girlfriend gonna do when she's calling me on the phone? What's your girlfriend gonna do when she feels like she's all alone? What's your girlfriend gonna do when you're spending all your time at the gym? What's your girlfriend gonna do? You know you're wishing she was here. Mr. Curious, he's living around my dream.
Find out more about Doll by Kevin Cahoon and Ghetto Cowboy at www.kevincahoon.com. That's www.kevincahoon.com.
From Orlando, Florida, Linda Nunez brings us her fourth album called Cry Mercy.
Cry Mercy is straightforward rock music, just unabashed power rock. Lyrically, I discuss topics that are significant to life, specifically my life, but that's what translates so well. I put the topics out there to deal with, recognized, and move past in order to, you know, hopefully find happiness at the end of the day. So I guess if you take nothing else from Cry Mercy, take the Nunez approach of free yourself to be yourself.
You can learn more about the album Cry Mercy at www.lindanunez.com. That's www.lindanunez.com.
Oh!
Friends are a band from San Francisco, and since two of the three members are gay, we wonder if there might be more to the X Factor.
The guys are Colin, Chris, and Peter, and Colin partially attributes the naming of their debut album, Dear John, to that infamous genre of letters, but says there was more to it.
The new album is a bunch of songs that came about after a bunch of band breakups, and the three of us got together and created a wonderful group of songs that are catchy enough to make people dance and yet intelligent enough where we'll stick around for the rest.
About the ex-boyfriends and their album, Dear John, at www.ex-bf.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. Filling in for Chris Wilson, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
It's a melodious half-hour collection of our Audiophile producers' picks for the best queer-created music of 2005. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can own the Audiophile 2005 Year in Review. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Kathy Sanchez, Rick Watts, Rex Wachner, Graham Underhill, Stephen Hunt, Hugh Young, and Barry Empson, and J.D. Doyle and Pam Marshall with Chris Wilson and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link on our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please visit thiswayout.org to see both good and not so good news about This Way Out and how you can help keep us on the air. You can also choose from some unique LGBT history, music, and culture CDs as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on Dade City Community Radio, Dade City, Florida, KFAR, Knoxville, Tennessee, CFUV, Victoria, British Columbia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this Communité radio station. Stay tuned.